welcome back to another episode of A Simple Life with Michael Jeffries. On this podcast, we attempt to let go of all the subtext and social barriers that hold us back. It isn't about being right or wrong. We're just trying to keep it real. During this conversation with Kristens, you'll hear how the tragic death of her mother on her last day of high school changed her life, how she married young, divorced an abusive husband after 6 years, how she felt abandoned by God, her church, and her friends for choosing divorce, and how she found her own identity right in the middle of working through all these feelings of abandonment. Don't be afraid of being yourself. It's important to have boundaries. You don't owe people an explanation for saying no. No can be a complete sentence. Those are a few of Kristens' words that really struck me during this interview. She allowed herself to be extremely vulnerable, and I'm grateful. So without waiting any longer, let's get into it. Welcome back to another episode of A Simple Life with Michael Jeffries. I'm Michael Jeffries, and today I'm interviewing Kristens from a long time ago. Kristens and I met, did we meet before we worked at the coffee shop together?
I don't think so.
No.
I knew of you because I was friends with your sister.
And it was a very small town.
Yeah. And you did orchestra with my older sister.
Yes, I did. We both played violin. Mm-hmm. And then we worked at Great Lakes, what used to be Great Lakes Chocolate and Coffee Company, and now is Five Lakes Coffee? Mm-hmm. Okay. And back then, I mean, we worked together, so we did shifts together, but I never really felt like I knew you well. Like, we didn't hang out outside of the coffee shop.
That's true.
You and my sister were pretty close, if I remember right. Okay. So I guess let's start back there. Like, tell me about yourself as a young girl growing up in Sturgis, Michigan. Who are you?
It's a very complex question. So we would have met 2004, which seems so long ago now.
Yeah.
My mom had just passed away. She passed away on my last day of high school in a car accident. I was in a weird spot in my life at that point. I don't have a relationship with my dad, so I felt like I lost my only parent at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was like in this weird 18-year-old angsty grief, like, what is going on with my life, period. So, yeah, I worked...
When we met.
You probably don't feel like you knew me at that point or were able to get to know me because I was really closed off. I had just had walls, you know.
I had no idea.
A lot of people that I met, like, after my mom passed away did not know any of that stuff either. They didn't know that I didn't know how to cope with...
You seemed very well adjusted, like a normal 18-year-old to me.
I appreciate that. I was very good at wearing that mask.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure that everything seemed like it was okay, when internally it was just, like, chaos.
What was it like? I mean...
I was angry. I was just angry. Not outwardly angry. I'm sure I was just, like, happy-go-lucky, you know, bubbly, like everybody that knows me knows that I am.
Mm-hmm. Very social.
Very social.
And kind.
Thank you.
I mean, you prepared a charcuterie board for us to enjoy during this. Like, you invited me to your home, served me coffee. Yeah.
That's a big part of who I am now, as an adult, as a mid-30s adult. I just love taking care of people and, you know, stuff like that. It brings me joy to do that. And, you know, not everybody is like that. And that's fine. But that's just something that I enjoy doing. But yeah, when I was 18, I was just angry. I was angry, like, I was raised kind of in the church. So
what does that mean?
I was raised, like, we went to church. At that point in my life, I was dating the pastor's son from our church. You know, went to youth group every week.
What kind of church?
It was a non-denominational church in Sturgis, which was right across the street from where I lived. So I could literally just, like, walk across the road and go to church. There was a brief stint where we went to Church of the Nazarene.
Oh.
In Sturgis.
Yeah.
We didn't attend there very long, and it was a lot more rules. Like,
no
girls
dancing,
couldn't sit with the boys.
No
girls
going to
had to wear.
You couldn't sit with boys.
No. We went to youth group. Boys sat on one side of the room, girls sat on the other.
Really?
Yeah. Church on Sundays, we had to wear dresses and pantyhose, which I hated.
You
I just
have
hated
bare
it.
Legs.
Couldn't have bare legs. It was just like rules upon rules upon rules. And
but it didn't last long.
No, it didn't last long. So then we started going back to the church that I grew up going to, you know, doing vacation Bible school and Superbook Olympics and all of that stuff. And so, yeah, I was very involved in the church, you know, like. And then when my mom passed away, I was just angry. I was like, why? Mm-hmm. You know, why would God take our mom away? Because I have three sisters, and my two younger sisters, you know, were like 13 and 14. Mm. And then there was me, that was 18, and my older sister was 19. And I was like...
All the same father? Like, the father wasn't around for anybody?
No.
Wow.
So... My older sister has a different dad than the us younger three. But no, our dad has just been in Tennessee, you know, absent for our childhood. And so I was like, we're orphans now, basically. And I was just, I didn't understand, you know, when people would say, you know, God has a reason or... You know,
people would come up to you and say,
yeah,
God has a reason.
Yeah, like, you know, you don't understand it right now, but, you know, there's a reason. And I'm like, F you.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's no way that, like, a benevolent, like, loving, almighty God would do this. You know what I mean? Mm. And I think that was probably when I started to, like, question things. Like
the church things.
The church things. Yeah, exactly. And, but I was really angry. And then on the other hand, I was like, well, I need to cling to God because he's all I have,
yeah.
You know? So it was really hard for me to come to like a balance. Does that make sense? Between
or peace. Like
yeah.
Some
yeah.
Kind of like a working relationship with yourself and with.
Exactly.
Whoever you needed to define God as after that.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was just, it was a real struggle for that period of my life. And then.
What was your relationship with your mom like? I mean, growing up.
Wonderful.
Okay.
She's
pretty
like.
Tight.
Yeah, she's like, and I think my sisters would all say this too, like, she was like the mom that's your best friend, right? She always took care of us and, you know, we always knew that we were loved. You know, there was never the question, like, that some, you know, people have, like, do I matter to my parents? You know, like, it was never a question. Our mom was just everything to us. So it was very devastating when she passed away, especially because she passed away when we were relatively young. I'm like, she's never going to see me.
Overnight.
Yeah.
Like, wasn't expected.
No. She had gone to the store to get things for my graduation open house, which was the next day. and my older sister and my grandma were with her. And in the car. And what had happened was there was a lot of really bad storming during that, like during the day that day. And there was like power outages, and they thought that like a tornado had touched down and whatever. Well, the winds were so high that it just uprooted a tree and it fell on the van and basically like snapped her neck. She was driving and like it killed her instantly. So we...
And your grandma and your older sister were fine.
They were fine because they were in the back seats of the van. They weren't like up in the front with her. Yeah. So,
dang.
You know, I thought, you know, she's never going to see me get married. She's never going to see me have kids. Like, this is just so unfair.
Right. Like, your kids aren't going to have a grandma.
Yeah. It's, you know, they already aren't going to have, like, a grandpa. Because at that point, I didn't have a relationship with my dad that lived in Tennessee. You know, I was like, this is just all around unfair. And I hate the world. I hate everything. Like, I don't know how to deal with the emotions that I have, mm-hmm. you know, as an 18-year-old.
Yeah.
That is now,
you're
like...
You're already an 18-year-old.
Yeah. So, I ended up, yeah, starting to work at the coffee shop where I met you, and I was going to Glen Oaks Community College, mm-hmm. Where I met my now ex-husband, father of my three children, and I was like, okay, now I've met Michael, and Michael, my ex-husband, not Michael, you.
Not me, Michael.
And I was like, okay, like, now we got to get married, you know, because, you know, that was the thing to do. Like, in our, like, conservative, like, Christian circles, like, okay, there's no sex outside of marriage. Like, my ex-father-in-law sat us down and was like, if you guys have sex before marriage, like, I will, Peter said, like, I will put you 6 feet under. And I remember being, like, terrified. I was like, okay, well, we need to get married as soon as possible. Like,
because I want to have some sex. Because
exactly, like, my hormones are raging. I'm, like, 19 years old at this point, you know? And
you
so.
You have sex outside of marriage and you were just afraid by that? Or
well,
did you
I think
not?
There's, like, always, like, that tension, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
When you're in love with somebody and you're attracted to that person, like, I mean, not for everybody, but I was like, we need to get down to business, right?
Sure.
And, you know.
So you met this kid
at Glen Oaks.
Glen Oaks.
Yeah.
And had you had serious boyfriends before that?
The only serious boyfriend, you know, that I had had before that was Nathan, who was the pastor's son. Like, we dated
from the church,
like, you know, and of course there was nothing going on there, you know?
Sure.
Well,
you were kids, too.
Yeah.
In a conservative, both in conservative families.
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't any pressure. There wasn't this cultural thing that you're in college and everybody's just sleeping around. And
exactly.
Yada, yada, yada.
So, yeah. So, Mike and I got married. We were both virgins when we got married. And...
Were you still at Glen Oaks when you got married? Or had you kind of moved on from that?
By that point... We had both done our 2 years at Glen Oaks. And, yeah, we got married. And I had just stopped working at the coffee shop right before we got married.
Oh, so you worked there for a while.
I worked there almost 2 years.
Okay.
And we got married and I, you know, had three babies in 4 years. And
whoa. That's intense.
And, you know, then we got divorced in 2012.
How old were your kids when you got divorced?
Oh, they were young.
Okay.
Because my youngest was born in 2011. So there was just a lot of...
So you got married in 2006?
2006.
And you got divorced... Not long after your last child was born?
Yeah.
Okay, so you were married for like 5, 6
mm-hmm.
years?
6 years.
Okay. Having babies like that during that time period?
Yeah. There was a lot of bad things about that relationship that I chose to overlook because I was, you know, you forgive and forget in the church. Like,
okay.
So I'm like, okay, I just need to forgive and move on. And it was just a cycle of me doing that and expecting the changes that, you know, he said he was going to make. And
so there was a cycle of he knew there was something wrong. You knew there was something wrong. It would flare up.
Mm-hmm.
And he would feel bad and you would forgive him. And then everything would be okay. And then it would happen again.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was just...
You don't have to go into it.
No, I mean, it was...
You can if you want to.
I'm trying to figure out how to word things. There was a lot of red flags before we got married, which should have been a sign to me to not do this thing that,
But you'd
you know,
never been in a relationship.
But I had never, before.
You
yeah.
didn't know these things.
Yeah.
And you didn't have mom there to...
Yeah.
Kind of...
My mom would have...
Be like, yo, sister.
Put the kibosh on that.
Yeah,
like,
you don't want this life.
Yeah. You know, and my ex was very, very good at having a different persona outside of our home.
Okay.
And everybody's like, well, he would never do these things that blah, blah, blah. And I'm
so
like...
So you were trying to get support and you would say things to people.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't believe you.
Our very close friends, we had another married couple from the church that we started going to after we got married, which was out in Mendon, that we became very, very close with. The wife and I had our first babies on the same day at Bronson Hospital, an hour apart. Our rooms were across the hall from each other.
Whoa.
You know, like, we were very Tight. Close with them.
Yeah.
And, like, they knew what was going on.
Okay.
You know, we had several, like, interventional type meetings with them. His family knew, my family, like my sisters knew. And it's like, no, but nobody else.
Okay.
Because like, I didn't want to spread that around because I'm like, still wanted to like protect him in a sense. Like, I don't want people to think like he's a bad person.
Yeah.
And like, still to this day, like, I'm like, you're not a horrible person.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be your friend. And I talk to you because we have three children together, but like, if I didn't have to, I wouldn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like most people just knew the one side of him that he wanted people to know. And I always...
Do you think he was doing that on purpose?
I think it was probably more of a, like... There was a lot of guilt. Like, he didn't want people to know that he was, like, you know, I don't want to say necessarily, like, sinning, you know what I mean? Like, there was like, pornography addiction, there was abuse in our marriage, blah, 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 and, like, I think that he probably, like, felt remorseful about that and didn't want anybody else to know, you know?
Right.
Because it made him feel bad and feel guilty, which... You know, at this point, it is what it is. You know, it's in the past, but, yeah.
And for two people that grew up in a conservative church and still went to one, pornography of any kind is like this huge issue.
Yeah.
Whereas for other people, it's like, who cares?
Yeah.
But then there's this whole abuse thing.
Yeah. So the pornography thing, like, I knew about before we were married.
Okay.
And, you know, he would say that, you know, he stopped and or he has like an accountability partner, you know, cause that was like real big.
Did you care?
I was like, well, this is an issue and I could see how like this is going to be an issue. And like, as a woman, I was like, this bothers me because now I feel inadequate, you know, like you should be looking at me.
Right.
You know? And so that was a struggle for me because I did not feel like I was good enough for my own husband. And, you know, it was, it made like...
So very, very like, you knew there was problems, but you didn't want people to think you was a bad person.
Yeah.
And you didn't want people to think you're inadequate, but you felt inadequate.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Absolutely. And like, so he would say, you know, like, I'm like, I stopped, I, you know, I have an accountability partner, blah, blah, I'm doing great. I haven't, you know, done X, Y, Z. And I would be like, okay, but like something in the back of my mind, like I always knew like when it had started up again, right? There was just like, I just knew.
Something's wrong.
And then he would like lie to me about it. And I'm like, I know you're lying to me. Like, just be honest. Like, that's all I want is, like, open communication and for you to be honest with me. And then it would be like, lie, 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 lie. And then I'd be like, I know. And then he would finally admit to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why couldn't you just admit it to me, like, at the beginning? Like, yeah. And then it was just a cycle. It just kept happening over and over and over again. And, you know, when I was finally like, this is done. Like, I want a divorce. It's done. And he was like, okay. There was no, like, pushback at all. He was like, I'm fine with that. But as soon as, like, our church friends and his family found out, all of a sudden it was like, well, now I'm going to fight for our marriage.
Okay.
We're not getting a divorce. Because his friends and his family were like, you can't get divorced. Like, that's unacceptable. You need to fight for your wife and your family and your kids. And there's nothing that you can't overcome with God. And, you know, and we at this point had gone to marriage counseling like 3 or 4 times, like during our marriage. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, I want to go back to marriage counseling. And I'm like, buddy, this ship has sailed. But I'll humor you if you think it's going to make you look good to your friends, basically.
So you were still wanted to help him.
I was still trying to protect his image. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. Like, I honestly have thought about that a lot, like, since our divorce. Like, why did I do that? Like, why was it important to me to do that? Mm-hmm. And I cannot come up with a reason. Like, is it just in my nature? Like,
father of your children?
Yeah, he is the father of my 3 children, and I don't know. It was a weird dynamic. So we went to marriage counseling. We met with the like assistant pastor of our church that's now in Three Rivers because we had since moved right before our second child was born. And the pastor, who was an ex-police officer, was basically like, well, you need to forgive him and like stay with him. And this is right after I had explained to the pastor, like, an incident of abuse that had happened, like, literally the night before. Hmm. And...
did you go for support and help? Or was it... why did you explain it to the pastor? Like,
he was asking specifics about, like, the nature of the things that were happening in our relationship. And I was like, well, let me give you an example. As a part of marriage counseling.
Okay.
And he's like, well, you need, you know... You need to forgive, and there's nothing that you can't overcome, and, like, God desires restoration for your marriage, and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, I'm going to stop you right there. You're asking me to stay with my abuser. Hmm. You're asking me to stay with my children's abuser. I was like, I can forgive him and move on. I don't need to put myself back in a situation and put my children back in a situation to keep being abused. Hmm. Like, I cannot believe you're not asking me to do that. You're telling me to do that. I was like, no. Like, and I, like, walked out. I was like, no.
The ship sailed.
This ship has
that
sailed.
That one sailed.
Yeah.
In particular.
And, yeah, I lost almost all of my friends in my divorce. There's
wow.
there was one married couple that I'm still friends with to this day, great friends with them still. And, you know, they're like, this is wrong. Like, what happened to you in what the church was counseling you to do was wrong. You know, like, we support you, blah, blah, blah. But it was very difficult.
But everybody else was Kristen's, you should forgive him.
Yeah.
And when you went through with the divorce, everybody kind of decided you were unforgivable.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And my story is not unique when it comes to divorce in the church. Like, it's happened to a lot of people, and a lot of people don't talk about it, and that's a shame. You know,
why do you think that is?
I don't know. You know, and it's not just people that have been divorced. Like, a lot of people have been hurt by the church for various, you know, reasons, because they're gay, or, you know, any number of things that the church will tell you, you know, you're going to hell for. So I have not gone to church since then, and you know, my beliefs have shifted.
In what way? I mean, first of all, wow, that's hard stuff. Yeah, and hard, I mean, I don't want to throw shade on your former pastor, but, like, a former pastor who's a police officer who's now, or sorry, a pastor who's former police officer who's trying to give marriage advice, like, not a psychologist, a dude who cares about you, right, has chosen this life of service, but isn't trained.
Yeah.
Unless... I mean, that's a thing that I've seen in the church, is that there's this element of belief that people who, you know, pastors or just wise old people are going to somehow have the answers to things that, like, professionals do who have gone to school for a really long time.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like, that's a big expectation of them.
I had read an article that somebody, one of my friends, had posted on Facebook about. It was basically a pastor, like, apologizing.
Okay.
For basically, like, using a one-size-fits-all kind of mentality. Like, he was apologizing because he's like, I now realize that, like, each situation is different.
Yeah.
And the answer is not even going to... It's not going to be the same in every situation. And, like, in my past, I was giving the same counsel, despite the circumstance, to everybody that came through my door, you know?
Yeah, wow.
So.
It's good of him to recognize that and come clean.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's people who recognize that but never really voice it.
Yeah. Well, they don't want to admit that they're wrong.
Right.
I mean, it's hard to do that.
Yes, it is. Okay, so sorry, I interrupted. You were going to tell me about how your relationship with the church or with God or your beliefs have changed.
I'm trying to formulate my thoughts now.
Yeah.
Because that's a heavy, complex question, too.
Yeah, well, and if you want to talk about something else, that's fine, too.
I think that's when I was very hurt by the church at that point. I was like...
I mean, twice.
I felt like
once
I was...
Once when your mom died.
Yeah.
And once...
So I felt like I was, like, excommunicated from, you know, the church that I was going to. I was a leader in the children's ministry at that church, and I was asked to step down from my position when I was going through my divorce.
Because you were getting divorced.
Because I was getting divorced. And I was like, how can you take this away from me? Like, this has nothing to do. Like, my love for these toddlers, because I was directing the toddler room. I was like, my love for these children has nothing to do with my divorce. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like they were two separate things, but, you know,
and you weren't getting paid for that. No. You were volunteering for that.
So, you know, the church saw it differently and, you know.
Sure.
I don't know. It was just, it was a big mess. And I'm like, fine, you know, I'm going to work on just taking care of my kids, my three children, and trying to figure my life out, which took me a while to do.
Yeah, you were pretty young when you got married.
Yeah.
So you'd been kind of in this partnership pretty formative
and
years.
And my identity was wrapped up in being Michael's wife. Like, that was my entire identity, was being Michael's wife and mother to my three children. Like, I did not have an identity outside of that, you know? I didn't go hang out. Like, I didn't have any, like, single friends. All my friends were married couples that we went to church with. Like, so I had to start over from scratch when I got divorced, except for, like, my one married friends that stayed with me, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was really hard.
Yeah.
Because despite, like, how social I am, it's still, like, difficult for me to kind of make the first move to make friends, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, once I've made friends, I'm, like, all about being social all the time.
Sure.
But, like, taking that first step is still, like, difficult for me because I'm like, what if they don't like me? You know, like, what if I say the wrong thing?
Yeah.
You know?
It seems, and I mean, I don't know what it's, it's hard for me to remember exactly what it was like as a kid, but as an adult, it seems like making new friends, there's this, it's an awkward social dance.
That is true.
And it takes time. And who has time as an adult? You know, you're busy doing adult things.
Especially, like, when you decide to, you know, start dating as an adult with children that's divorced. That's even worse than trying to make friends.
Right.
That's a nightmare. It's bad. It is so bad. And, so I said, that was the last time, after that marriage counseling session, was the last time that I went to church. And, like, I miss, like, the fellowship aspect of going to church. Like, being in a, you know, group of people.
A community that cares about each other and helps each other.
But then I'm like, do they really care about me? If they cared about me, they wouldn't have abandoned me in my hour of need, you know? Yeah. And so then I'm like, I'm mad at God again. Here we go, God. I'm mad. I'm mad at you again. Like, why is this happening to me? And I don't know, like, if that's just, like, a selfish way to deal with things, you know? But I was, like, very woe is me for a while because I just was like, this is happening all over again. Like, why? Mm-hmm. Like, what have I done to anger you, God? Like, I've been trying to be a good wife, a good biblical wife, you know.
Yeah.
Like, being, you know.
The person I was raised to be.
Yeah, like, being submissive and blah, blah, blah. And, you know. And I'm like, you know what? Like, it's okay to be my own person. And to have an identity that's not wrapped up in somebody else.
Do you still feel anger towards the quote-unquote church?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's been a lot of people that have been hurt by the church, that, and the church is just unapologetic about it for the most part, you know? And there is a lot of, like, plucking scripture out to fit whatever your agenda is, you know? Like, you can pull any verse out of the Bible and twist it to fit whatever you're saying, you know? You take it out of context. And, you know, I feel like that happens a lot within the church. And it's very harmful, you know. There's a lot of ways that I think you and I were raised, like purity culture, like stuff like that, that I think we can say as adults, like, has been damaging for us. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, a lot of shame and guilt wrapped up in there. And I don't even know if it was intentional, but it certainly came through for me.
Yeah.
I mean, as a way to control me.
Yeah.
Shame and guilt.
I would agree with that. The same, yeah. You know?
And fear.
And fear.
Fear of going to hell.
Fear. Yeah. I was like, we gotta get, Mike, we gotta get married right now because I'm ready to have some bang bang boogie and we can't do it before we get married because I will go straight to hell. Like, I was convinced, like, that it would be just unforgivable to have sex outside of marriage. You know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I ever had sex outside of marriage, you know, like, I would just feel such a deep shame that I wouldn't be able to live with myself. You know, like, I couldn't even fathom doing that because of just how, like, guilty and shameful and, like, disgusting dirty. I would feel. Exactly. Right. Exactly. So, yeah.
So you don't feel that way anymore?
No. Obviously not. No. No. I live a very different life than I used to. Yeah.
So how would you define your community or your God or your belief structure?
I would say, like, I still believe in God.
Okay.
But I don't feel like it's the same God that we were raised to believe in.
Sure.
You know, so
it's just different.
It's just,
it's not, there's not really something you can define there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's that relationship look like? Like, practically?
I don't even know how to answer that. I don't know.
Okay. What do you tell your kids about God?
Well, my kids still, they go to church when they're at their dad's house.
Okay.
And so they are being brought up the same way that their dad was brought up, which is, like, super conservative, you know.
At least half the time.
Yeah. And, I have issues with some of that stuff because, like, over the summer, my sister-in-law was pregnant. And my daughter says to me, "Well, I didn't know." She's like, "Well, who's my aunt married to?" And I was like, "Well, she's not married." And she's like, "How can she be pregnant if she's not married?" And I was like, "I don't understand. Like, people can get, you know, people can get pregnant without having a husband, without having a boyfriend, you know." And she was totally.
How old is your daughter?
She just turned 12.
Okay.
So she had no idea that...
That was a thing.
That was a thing because she is being taught that, like, you don't have sex outside. Like, the only way you're going to be able to have babies is if you're married. You know, and that's not the world that we live in.
Not
you
even,
know what I mean?
Not even you should, but you can.
You can't, yeah. And I'm like... You know, I want you to, you know, and she is convinced that, like, well, not, I'm not going to say she's convinced because I've had conversations with her about sexuality and gender identity, stuff like that. Because
okay.
She's like, well, you know, my dad said that being gay is a sin,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm like, well, what do you think? And she's like, well, I think you should be able to love whoever you want to love. And I said, you know, you're exactly right. And I'm going to love you no matter who you love, you know, like I want my children to know that I'm always going to accept them. Like, come hell or high water, like, you know.
Yeah.
They're always going to have their mom. And it's difficult for me to think that, like, the stuff that they're learning at the church that they go to is not fostering that relationship, you know?
Right. I mean, from your perspective, it sounds like it's very concerning.
Yeah.
Because they might, you know, not be able to learn the lessons you had to learn the hard way.
Yeah.
Without going through it the hard way.
Right. And I am like...
And you want to protect them from that.
I do. And I obviously just don't want my kids to just, you know, sow their wild oats wherever, sure, you know, they want to. Like, I want them.
You only get one body. Protect your body.
Exactly. Be like, safe. I want them to be in, like, a committed relationship before they choose to,
okay,
to do that, you know, just, like, as a mom, you know. But at the same time, I'm like, it's, you know, it's going to be a decision that they have to make for themselves. I can only do so much, and I'm not going to condemn them before they've even done it, which is like how we were raised. Like, you already know what's, you're going to hell if you do this thing, you know.
Right. It's
like
a dirty thing.
Yeah, there was always like that, just like your condemnation is on the horizon if you're even looking at someone with lust or whatever, you know, like, don't right, even do it. Like, put the right, blinders on.
If you need to, sit on the other side of the room.
Yeah. Sit on the opposite side of the room. So, have a chaperone.
Right.
You know, kiss dating goodbye. Date Jesus for a while.
Yeah.
So.
Speaking of the church, apologizing. I'm pretty sure that guy who wrote I Kiss Dating Goodbye apologized.
He did.
Did.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That whole purity culture thing.
Yep.
I wonder if that's because he's a dad now, and he has to reconcile who yeah, he thought he would be with who he is as a father.
Yeah, and it's what, like 20 years later now?
Quite a bit later.
And he was like, I was so young, I had no business writing a book, like, on this subject, because I didn't even know what I was doing at that point in my life, you know? Like,
right. Untrained.
Yeah.
But he had a platform.
He had a platform, exactly. And it reached millions.
Yeah.
Millions of people.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. Okay. So. So it felt like there was, like, you wanted to take the conversation to religion. So I want to make sure that you get to say what you want to say there. Was there anything else that you wanted to say about your relationship with religion or spirituality, or what the church has done to you, or things you think that you have seen in the church that have either damaged you or are concerning to you, or anything else? Because, I mean, that the, a lot of the conversation so far has been around those topics, and I don't want to stifle it. I want to make sure that I've explored it all.
Well, I think that I don't know that I have, like, anything else to kind of say about that, but that was just kind of where the conversation went, because that was such a big part of my
upbringing.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't mean to say, like, that like you were trying to control the conversation.
Oh, no.
Or anything like that. Sorry. Just, like, it seemed like you had some good things to say, some important things to say.
And I think this might be the first time that we've had that sort of conversation. So,
is this a conversation you would have with just, is this a normal conversation for you, or did you feel like is this important for you to say these things?
Well, I think it's important to be able to share it with other people, because a lot of the things just aren't talked about, you know? Like, there's still, like, that. And, like, I still, right now, like, feel uneasy about sharing some of this stuff, even though, not because of the conversation we're having, but because, like, I know that some, like, my ex-in-laws are probably going to listen to this, or, like...
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, friends, you know, of my ex-husband are going to be like, well, you know, I listen to this.
Dirty laundry.
Like, so... You know,
and we don't do that. We circle the wagons.
Exactly. We stuff all our skeletons in our closet and lock the door. And so I'm still, I don't know. But, like, I'm done, like, feeling like I need to protect and, like, not be honest about what has happened in my past,
mm-hmm,
for other people. Because I know a lot of people have gone through either the same or, like, similar things that I've gone through, and, like, people just don't talk about it.
And you what know? Does that do to them?
I think it's
do you see that as okay or not good?
Well, I mean,
because you're making a different choice.
Yeah, if people want, I mean, it's your personal decision. Like, if you don't want to talk about you know, your trauma, then that's, it's completely up to you as a person to, you know, that's a boundary that you've set, and, you know, you shouldn't be forced to, you know, rehash that, discuss it if you don't want to. But I feel like it's healing for people to know that they're not alone in the stuff that they've gone through that they haven't been able to talk about, you know, like, so there's other people that have gone through that too.
Yeah. So part of this for you is to say this into a microphone so that anybody who listens to this that has had that type of thing,
yeah,
knows that at least Kristen's understands.
Yeah. And I may never meet them, but, you know, I've been there too.
Yeah. What would you say to them?
I would say that your feelings are valid. And I'm sorry that you had to go through what you've been through. And I'm sorry that people have misused you, misheard you, you know, miss anything you. And that it's okay to grieve. Because I feel like a lot of the times you're expected just to move on. You know, just let it go. And like,
forgive and forget.
Forgive and forget. Yeah. And it's okay to be angry. It's okay to question things. And it's okay to talk about it if that's something you feel comfortable doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What would you say to the 18-year-old who's just lost their mother and was raised to deny their sexual impulses and has all these feelings of shame and guilt and fear wrapped up in the church that they don't even know about, like that person?
Oh, I would say that there's light at the end of the tunnel.
What if they don't even know they're in a tunnel?
Yeah.
What would you say to Kristen's back then?
I don't know.
The day before your mom died.
The day before my mom passed away. I would say, you know, just live your life to the fullest. I know that sounds really cliche, like something that you would find at Hobby Lobby, like on a, you know,
on a board,
on a wall hanging. Exactly. Live, laugh, love. But yeah, I mean, be authentic, like be your authentic self.
Don't be afraid of yourself.
Don't be afraid of yourself. Yeah.
I like that. No matter who you are.
Exactly.
Do you feel like you know yourself now?
I feel like I know myself a lot better than I did when I was 18. You know, there's still things that you discover about yourself, you know.
Sure.
But I feel like I'm more authentically and unapologetically myself than I was when I was 18. You know, when I cared about what everybody else thought about me.
So you don't care about what anybody thinks about you now?
Not to the magnitude that I did. Okay. When I'm not going to say you're I working don't. On that. You're yeah, working it's on a work that. In progress. I'm not going to say I don't.
Yeah.
Because still in the back of my mind, there's those fears, you know, like, what if I say the wrong thing? What if they don't like me? What if they don't want to be my friend, you know? Like, but at the same time, I'm like, if they don't want to be my friend, that's their loss.
Right. You've got some context now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So who do you think you are? The unapologetic Kristens.
The unapologetic Kristens. Well, my identity is no longer wrapped up in being like a wife and a mother.
Okay.
Like that.
I mean, you are a wife and a mother.
I am a wife and a mother. Yeah, I did. I did remarry a few years ago. Wonderful man.
To someone who seems like a really cool guy.
He is a really cool guy.
I got to meet him tonight.
Very, very fortunate. And he is the polar opposite of my ex-husband. My identity is not in being his wife. Like, I don't automatically introduce myself as Chris's wife, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously that's a part of my identity. And sure. Also, like, being a mother is still a big part of my identity. Just because I still have small, no, they're not really small anymore. I still have school-age children.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would say, I don't know. It's hard to pinpoint exactly who I would say that I am. But I just know it's not what I used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, you're more comfortable with who you are because you know who you are not.
Yes.
Okay.
That's a great way to put it.
And you're glad you're not who you are, who you were.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've come a long, long way and fought a lot of battles to not be that person anymore. And it was painful, but it was worth it.
Yeah. And it sounds like there's some things you miss. Like you were saying, you miss the community that you felt you had. But now you're not even sure that that was a real community.
Yeah. Well, there was so many like rules and stuff. And I'm like, if you put a bunch of rules on like loving people, is it really love? You know what I mean? Like you have all these stipulations and you're not just loving people as they are. Like you're expecting them to be or act a certain way, follow a certain set of rules. And if they don't, then it's like they're not worthy of your love, your time, your attention.
Yeah. Wow. So is there anything else that you feel like, I don't know, like we've discussed a lot of things, but I don't want to stop you from saying anything. Cause I know that one of the things you said throughout this was, especially for the person who might be going through abuse in their relationship or being let down by the church or something, you wanted to say something to them. Is there anything else that you want to say to anybody? And no worries if not. I want to make sure I give you the opportunity.
I think I would just say that it's important to have boundaries. Like, and to stick to those boundaries.
What are some boundaries that you've developed?
So one of the boundaries that I have developed for myself is, like, I'm very, I don't know if selective is the right word, but like, I'm kind of selective, like who I spend my time with and how I spend my time. Because before I was just like, I was a yes person. I would just say yes to everything. And I would literally run myself into the ground. Mm. And like, it's okay to say no. Like, that's one of my, like, I don't have to say yes to everybody. I don't have to do everything that somebody asked me to do. I don't have to go and, you know, do activities that just because somebody asked me, you know.
Hmm.
But I was so, like, concerned with pleasing people. I'm very much a people pleaser. And, you know, there's that fear, like, I have to say yes, because if I don't, then what's going to happen? And so I had to learn, like, the past couple years, especially, like, as my health issues kind of pile up, like, I have to be able to say no and spend my time how I want to spend my time and not say yes to everybody. So I'm not going to spend my time doing things that I'm not enjoying or passionate about, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
so for you, about a boundary, one of the boundaries you developed is just valuing your time and saying no when you want to say no.
Yeah. And it was very, very hard for me. It's something that Chris had to help me with.
Yeah.
Like, remind me, like, it's okay to say no.
Yeah.
And I gave him a lot of pushback at first. I'm like, no, it's not okay, you know? And he's like, you are literally running yourself into the ground, like, to the point where it's affecting your physical health.
Yeah.
And I want you around, you know?
Yeah.
The more you stress yourself out and the more you're doing, because I wasn't allowing myself any sort of rest at all. I always had something to do, something that needed to be done.
Mm.
You know, whether it was housework or doing PTO events at the school or, you know, any number of things. I always had something to do. And it was just exhausting all the time. So, yeah, being able to say no was like a big thing that I have just learned how to do, like, the past couple years. That's like, awesome. No was not a part of my vocabulary.
That's awesome.
Like, beforehand. So, yeah. It's,
Have boundaries, including...
Have boundaries.
Saying no.
Yeah, and saying no is okay. Saying no is okay.
It's okay to have priorities.
Yeah. And...
I like that.
You know, you don't have to explain your... Like, you don't owe people an explanation for saying no.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no can be a complete sentence. You don't have to explain to people why you don't want to do something or you can't do something or whatever else. Like, no mm-hmm. isn't acceptable. Just no is an acceptable answer.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Nice.
Yeah.
I like it.
It's good stuff.
Well, thanks for letting me do this.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I could listen for a long time.
Throughout this interview, it was very clear to me that Kristen's was compelled to share her story for a few specific reasons. That it should be very important how and what we teach our kids about morality, and to let those who've gone through similar experiences know they aren't alone. Being a 30-something myself, I can completely relate to Kristen's feelings that our life experiences can and should be shared, even the painful ones. Telling them helps others and helps ourselves. If you are interested in being a guest on the podcast, visit anchor.fm/asimplelife and leave me an audio message with your contact information. To support A Simple Life with Michael Jeffries, subscribe to the podcast, give us a rating on iTunes, or the best, share the podcast with a friend. Thanks for listening. We'll see you down the road.